Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
And here we are on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Wednesday afternoon. Welcome from the Allstate Skyline Studio. Steve Bertrand here, and we'll be here for the next 55 minutes or so. Terry Savage joins us to talk about what's going on in the world of personal finance. Terry, we're juggling a little bit there. Are you here?
Okay, and here I am.
Okay, so let's talk about what's going on.
First of all, let me say, these new studios are fantastic. I wish you would open them to the public for a guided tour. They're, as much as we love the ground floor studio, this is really spectacular.
You know what? Every day I look at the view, and I try not to ever worry about losing the view or not to be impressed by it, because it's just beautiful every day.
Great town, Chicago, and it's a great day. And boy, the market. So interesting stuff. We've got ups, downs, and ups. Apple, good news on their, not so much only good news on their earnings, but the fact that their forecast for the future is strong. So they're up, and they are, you know, sort of neck and neck with Amazon, who's going to get to the $1 trillion market cap, which is the value of your shares times the number of shares outstanding, $1 trillion. I remember in the old days, I think it was ExxonMobil was the largest company, and it was, you know, half the size when it was the largest company in the world.
So Apple came out with earnings yesterday, right? Did better than expected, which was a nice sort of change when it compared to Facebook and Twitter and things like that.
Well, part of it is Apple has physical products, and the other company, Netflix, Facebook, I have to remember who else that disappointed earlier in the week, Google, they're companies that don't have physical products. So everybody's looking to see how's Apple doing with the new 10, with the watches, is that continuing strong? And not only were the sales up and the profits up, but the forecast for the future was strong. And usually Apple announces something in the fall quarter, so I haven't heard anything about that. But the other thing that's up today is the 10-year Treasury note rate to 3%. Now, you may remember a couple of months back when the 3-month Treasury bill rate first hit 3%. It's been recently hanging in there under 2.75%. It was what caused the market to drop. That's obviously not happening today. But fact is, now we have the 10-year Treasury note, which is yielding 3%. And we have the fact that mortgage rates, because they're based on the 10-year Treasury, are also creeping up. So you saw a report that home sales, biggest drop in more than 2 years. So it's like a tangled bowl of spaghetti here. Good news, bad news.
Strong economy. Good news, I guess, if you are a do-it-yourself investor, came from Fidelity, right? Is there going to be a price war for...
No, how can you go below zero?
But I mean, no, opposite ways. I guess a reverse price war for these mutual fund companies to try to attract customers.
Okay. Do you remember a few weeks ago we discussed the fact that if you buy your shares of a mutual fund through a financial planner or broker, you could be paying substantial fees.
Right, right.
And that I've always said you should go to Fidelity or Vanguard and buy their index funds. Vanguard, traditionally, the lowest, like 12 basis points, 0.12%. But today, Fidelity announced it's creating two major indices, one of U.S. stocks and one of international stocks. And guess what the fee will be? Zero.
Nada, baby.
Nada, zero. Now, it won't be the S&P 500 because you have to pay a royalty to S&P 500 to use their index. So they'll create their own proprietary Fidelity index.
If you were to come up with a fund that just mirrored the S&P 500, do you have to pay the S&P 500?
Yeah, if it actually mirrors completely the S&P 500, okay, You'd have to pay a licensing fee. But Fidelity, and you can trust Fidelity to do this, figures it can create a total market index fund. It's called the Zero Total Market Index Fund and the Fidelity Zero International Index Fund. They will pay 0.00% in fees if you invest in those funds directly through Fidelity. So this is a pretty spectacular deal. In fact, if you just want to be exposed to the stock market, if you just want to have an IRA exposure, I don't know why you wouldn't go directly to Fidelity, which you can do, open an IRA there, and buy this. Now, the question is, how on earth can they do a 0.00% fee?
Right.
Because computers don't charge a lot. You know, they have their computers up and running. They sell a lot of other proprietary products, not very expensively, but Fidelity is using its muscle in this market to make a huge statement. Their computers buy this index and they rebalance it every night and so forth. they don't have to charge fees. You do it online. They don't have stamps. They don't have statements.
Yeah, but someone's got to pay for something. Someone's got to pay for the office space.
Oh, yeah, but Fidelity makes a lot of money doing things like retirement plan services and has other funds that are do charge management fees, not huge ones, but where they add some expertise. But since the whole world is rushing to indexing, they realized that they were going to have to do something to steal the spotlight from Vanguard. And I'm telling you, I think it's the biggest headline in personal finance I've seen in quite some time.
Okay, I want to ask you, I sent you this story yesterday about indexing capital gains.
Let's stop for a second.
And you're going to have to talk very slowly to me on this one.
I will.
I'm outraged and I don't understand any of
it. Oh, no, I'm excited. All right, here we go. Every once in a while, Steve and I get on the opposite side of the table. So let's start over. We finished with the stock market discussion. It's down about 60 points because interest rates are up, but it's not crashing because the 10-year is at 3%. So that's what's going on in the stock market, and the Fed will talk later, and they'll probably raise rates again at the short end. So that's the stock market today, and the big news is Fidelity's 0% index funds. Now, yesterday, just full disclosure here, Steve sends me an email. Will you talk about this tomorrow? This is horrible.
Now, you are adding a tone that I don't think I shared on that tone. How can you know what my tone was?
I know what you were thinking.
I didn't use emojis or anything like that.
Because I know you. And you just said.
Yeah.
What did you just say
about it? I just said I'm outraged, but I don't really understand it.
Oh, well, you don't really understand.
Okay, explain it for me.
Okay, here's the new topic. Among the many other tax breaks that are potentially being proposed for the second round of tax cuts is an idea that we would adjust capital gains taxes. Remember, you hold an asset, a stock, a mutual fund, mm-hmm. not in your retirement account. Everything in your retirement account eventually comes out as ordinary income, but just you own it personally. Everything when you come out, if there's been inflation, they subtract the inflation, and you only pay taxes on the actual gains. So 3% inflation over 20 years, you know, cuts the value of your gain. It would cut the value of your gain when you take it in half if you subtracted that inflation. That's a rule of 72. So people are saying this is a tax break for the rich.
Well, it is. That I'm sure of.
Because only presumably the rich, in quotes, own stocks. And I think that's a pretty good presumption. But let me cast it in another light, Steve, and see if I can't get your attention to make this a point that makes sense. We already index home sales profits for inflation. Years ago, you used to be able to roll over your profits into another home without being taxed. It must be at least 10 or 12 years back. They changed it so that when you sell your primary residence, we're not talking about investments, you get a $250,000 exclusion on the gains. You bought the house for $350,000 and you hang in there and we've had inflation and home prices went up. It's $500,000. You can exclude all those gains at $500,000 on a joint return because we recognize, and this goes to everybody, lower income, middle income, and upper income, the fact that inflation has boosted the prices, and we thought it's unfair to tax you on the fact that you're going to sell it for a higher price, but the dollars you get back will buy less.
Okay.
So why would you tax someone? So we recognize that for homes. It ends at a maximum
gain. It's changed with the new tax law, too,
right? $10 million mansion. No, that's still the same.
I think you can't sell as quickly as you used to.
No, you still $250,000 after you've held the house and lived in it as your primary residence for two of the last 5 years. So the point is, we recognize we don't want to tax inflation gains in the housing market. And this proposal, which is not even, I haven't even seen it written anywhere, but widely, headlined, that we would index capital gains for inflation and subtract out taxing the profits that are based strictly on inflation. Because when you sell that stock, or whatever it might be, you get your money back. And your money buys 3% per year or less.
So I can give it to you that you can make a rational argument for it because it might make sense that way and it's done with homeowners or whatever. But we're not in a position, I don't know, to be giving away money, especially to the very rich. And so here's my statistic out of ignorance. What I read, and I read this on MarketWatch yesterday, and they are quoting a study from the University of Pennsylvania, so for Penn. It shows that the top 0.1% of earners would reap more than 60% of the tax cut. So 0.1% of the top 1% would get 60% of the money, the middle class, by contrast, would get 0.1% of the money.
Yeah, but they don't have the gains. Now, I'm not trying to make an argument for rich people getting tax breaks. What I'm trying to do is explain the
concept. That's what this is, really, right? I mean, this would be... I understand what you're saying.
If, for example, you made an exception for farmers... No, I'm trying to make something up as I fly, but
that's okay.
Or maybe all auto dealers, that they have a special place in our economy. And when they sell their places or sell the family farm or something, we're going to exempt them from some taxes because those taxes are either only brought about by inflation or we haven't acknowledged that they're so significant to our economy. This is making policy by group, right, by group, right, by group. It might be easier to complain about it. The fact is, the only people that get capital gains are the people who have enough excess money to invest outside their retirement accounts. And the question is whether a principle of fairness in taxing only the gains that come from successful investing as opposed to those that come from inflation. I'm not going to go out on a limb arguing for this. You asked me to explain it.
Well, that's the thing. So I think we can agree on the theoretical. Theoretically, this is why this might be done
that's
or make
exactly
sense.
That's exactly the
principle. But when it comes to practical...
You don't want to be taxed when you sell your home just because it doubled in price because of inflation.
I understand that.
When you go to buy the next home, you're still in a middle-income home.
But when we're talking about the practical situation of where we are today, that we would be giving away all of this money to 0.1%.
I know you don't want to go here, so I'll just make one statement because you love to rile me up. I believe that people do not work to pay taxes. They work to earn an after-tax return. They invest to earn an after-tax return. So the incentives for the most productive parts of our society, whether they be in your first job and you're shocked and you see how much taxes are taken out, or whether you're an investor or whether you run a business, I think you work to put money in your own pocket. And I think that's a very good basic principle on which to start. So if you believe that people work to earn an after-tax return, don't you think they will work harder? If I told you, Steve, office, and if you work 4 more hours this week, you won't earn any overtime, you won't earn any extra fees, you're going to say, excuse me, I think I'll go play golf.
If the middle class is only getting 0.1% of this, there's no incentive at all. This is only for the rich people.
That's not what I'm talking about. You asked me, how can we at a time like this, when the government is running, again, a $1 trillion deficit,
Give away more money.
Okay. Well, the fact is, the hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenues. But if they keep making, let me just put it this way, if they put $1 billion into building a wall in the middle of a desert in Texas, that is not going to be productive investment. So you can't get me to argue
Savage. I finally got her to do it.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline Studio on this Wednesday afternoon. And really, Terry Savage, the beauty of the Skyline Studio from Allstate is that it's mobile. We can go from one to the other, and here we are.
It's like one of those parties where you go one place for the appetizer, place for the lunch.
It's the party all along. Okay.
We're dessert.
Well, tell me, I was reading this article, TerrySavage.com, this column you wrote, and you quoted someone as referring to the great term limit crisis.
And it is, because remember 20 or 30... Well, let me ask you a personal question.
Okay.
You can duck it if you want. But you have life insurance, of course.
Yeah.
And did you buy it? You know, your daughter, I know, just graduated college, so you probably bought 30-year term.
I never did that. No.
You bought whole life. Permanent
We have
life.
Whole life insurance, but so way back in the day.
Yeah.
Was it 30 years ago when you first started being able to buy this?
Exactly. It became very popular. It was buy term.
Because more people could sell it, right? That's what it was.
Exactly. Buy term. No, it was insurance product, but they decided to market this idea. What happened in the early 80s was the returns on cash inside life insurance policies were so low when you were getting 10% in a money market fund. Nobody wanted to buy life insurance.
Right.
So they came up with the idea of buy term, invest the difference. And a lot of people back in the 80s and 90s bought 20 and 30 year level term policies. You could buy more insurance for a lower price. The premium was guaranteed to stay level as long as you paid it for the entire 20 or 30 years. So you felt very secure. And you figured, gee, 20, 30 years from now, the mortgage is paid off. My kids are out of college. What will I need life insurance for?
So I was approached by it and I looked into it and I think I was advised against it at the time. So I never
well,
did. did purchase it.
You were approached by a salesperson, but a lot of people just went, wow, I'll buy this term. And then another thing happened about 10 or 12 years ago. All these online sites, AccuQuote, TermQuote, a bunch of them, came up and quoted the differences between policies. So the prices were cut dramatically over the last decade or two. You could buy term insurance very cheaply. But here's the crisis right now. Term insurance is a great product. I'm going to tell you that at the end of your 20 or 30 years, you might find a further need for life insurance. The story I quote is an insurance expert gave me, a guy who got divorced and started another family. His term insurance is running out. He's got high cholesterol. He had a stent in his heart. He's got high blood pressure controlled with medicine. He can't even qualify for a new policy when the term expires. And so what I'm saying to people is, check out your term insurance. Check whether you're going to need insurance down the road, even after the kids are gone, the mortgage is paid. Maybe for a spouse who's ailing, you want to leave something to your family members. And buy it while you're young enough and healthy enough, either to buy a new term or buy a more permanent life policy, the kind that has an investment portion of it. Many people said, can't I convert my term insurance? I thought it was convertible. And the salespeople of old didn't point out that you could convert after the 7th year or the 10th year.
But not
after the 20th year when it expires. So check your term policy. I know you're paying the same premium every year, but check it out. The column is at terrysavage.com.
Yeah, read the column because it ends with several steps of what to do. Terry Savage, nice to see you again.
Good to be with you in this
next week.
Studio.
Will you do it again next week?
Absolutely.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are above the Chicago River in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Thanks very much for tuning in to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Wednesday afternoon, 12:39 in the afternoon. I look forward a little bit later in the program to talking again with Helen Cameron. She's one of the co-founders of Uncommon Ground up on the north side. You know, they have a rooftop farm there above the restaurant, and we will talk to Helen a little bit about that. They're celebrating their 10th anniversary. But, well, restaurants first. We go to Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business, who probably knows from Uncommon Ground and a lot of other Northside restaurants because he is a big foodie in town. Frank, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Yeah,
okay.
How are you?
Good. You know Uncommon Ground, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we're going to talk with Helen a little bit later, but first some stories that have been in Crane Chicago Business recently. And boy, I got to tell you, you've got a spiffy new website. Everything looks pretty nice there. Did that just debut today?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Overnight, we made it live. So yeah, everybody should check out the new furniture at chicagobusiness.com and let us know what you think.
It's the same furniture, just put in a new order, I think. The furniture's always been outstanding.
Yeah, well, thanks. We got plastic over it now. Don't sit on it.
I thought that was just for me. Okay, so let's go to O'Hare and DuPage County. You know, people of the suburbs, the western suburbs, have been talking about getting access to O'Hare forever. It looks like there's some movement there, right, with this latest rehab, but they're still talking about the idea of a western terminal. I'm not sure I understand all of that, but where are we now, and where would DuPage County and Dan Cronin like to see us go?
Yeah, so the chairman of the DuPage board, he met with the Crane's editorial board just recently and was talking about that western access to O'Hare that everybody in DuPage has wanted for a long time. So Dan Cronin came in and said, you know, the O'Hare expansion plan actually could lead to at least a virtual western terminal. And it's going to be a while, but basically there are three you know, coming stages to the expansion plan. The one underway right now that we all know about, and under the overall agreement with the airlines, the third and fourth envisioned satellite terminals will begin when and if overall traffic at O'Hare rises from 80 million or so passengers today to 101 million. The city says that probably won't happen for a decade or so, but DuPage obviously wants to speed that conversation up. There's like a 10,000 space parking lot that's being contemplated for employees under the plan. They're saying, you know, open that to the public too. At some point, people in the western suburbs may vote with their wallets if you don't give them western access. And as these satellite terminals are built out over the next, you know, 10, 20 plus years, let's take a look at having it be an open Western access.
Well, that's
interesting conversation.
They are working on ground access right now, right? So, I mean, right now, if you want to go to O'Hare and you live west of the airport, you've got to come all the way around east and then back in through Rosemont. I think with this current redevelopment, they're fixing that. I don't want to get over my skis here, but what we're talking about now is down the road where there might actually be sort of a remote terminal that people could access from Addison or from the western suburbs.
That's right. And, the parking lot maybe being the first part of that, and what they call a virtual terminal, where they have these kind of satellite terminal areas, but there's that western access.
So what would a virtual,
they're at the forefront of that.
What would a virtual terminal be, where you would check in somewhere at a building and then be bused to the planes, or how would that work?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they're talking about, making sure that there's parking access, making sure you don't have to drive all the way around, and then there's satellite terminals where you may, these smaller terminals where you may catch a plane right from there, or, as you say, take some public transit into that main terminal cluster that we know so well.
Ann Moore has a story in Cranes about a couple of guys who were in marketing. They went to school together, and they caught an Asian carp, and they figured out what to do with it to make money. Explain that for me.
Yeah, I love this story. So we've got a couple of guys who went to a wedding in St. Louis together, Michael Cody and Logan Honeycutt, and they stopped to fish in the Mississippi, and then they said they saw Asian carp the size of sharks leaping from the water. I love that image. And so rather than just kind of chalk that up as an interesting experience, they thought, okay, there's an invasive species here. It's, pushing out all the native fish. It's really hurt the fishery as well as the wildlife. So there's the fishermen out of work. What can we do from a capitalism standpoint to help solve this? And they thought, let's turn these suckers into cat and dog treats. And so they've created this company in the West Loop called Barrett All Pet Foods, in the Fulton Market area, and for like $8 to $12 for a 1 to 2 ounce bag, you can get pet treats made out of Asian carp.
It's an interesting story in how they scaled, no pun intended, up from just catching their own fish to sort of figuring it out. I think they're in River North now, and they're on their way, right? They're about to turn a profit, or they expect a big year of growth this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And they had to create the supply chain from scratch. They met with the state of Illinois. They met with the fishermen who were out of work and put them back to work. And as part of that, they now have enough supply. And they won a $10,000 Purina Pet Food Innovation Prize for doing something positive with an invasive species.
And they've got a kitchen now because their wives kicked them out of their kitchens at home. Frank Sennett writes
about that. Yeah, that's another great detail.
Get out of the house. You can read more at chicagobusiness.com. Nice to talk to you, Frank. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, we're going to go up on the roof to the farm coming up, but right now, my favorite part of the show.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. All right, quiz time. What Illinois company am I talking about? They took down Blockbuster with relative ease in the early 2000s, but when streaming jumped onto the scene, they were faced with some serious concerns. Out of ideas? Redbox. Yes, they're still around, and they're fighting their way back up to where they used to be. But how are they doing that, you ask? With the company's first major ad campaign. The parent company of Redbox decided that the awareness will help spur resurgence of the Oak Brook Terrace company. And that resurgence is exactly what they're looking for, because they're still in a multi-billion dollar industry. However, DocuSign found what they're looking for in Chicago's very own Spring CM, and they were willing to pay $220 million for it. The sales software startup has been around since 2005, but they've already collected a group of big-time clients like Salesforce, Shell, Adobe, and Facebook. So maybe Redbox can take a note or two about the desired innovation in other industries, but can they innovate an already disrupted market? I guess we'll see in the near future. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline studio. Thanks very much for tuning in on this Wednesday afternoon. John Williams just around the corner. But before that, let's say hello to Helen Cameron, the co-owner of On Common Ground. Helen, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hello, Steve.
Is this time number 2 or time number 3? I can't remember now. You've been here so many times.
I think it's probably the third time.
That's nice. And so here we are, Uncommon Ground, up in the 3800 block of North Clark Street. And you guys are celebrating, what, the 10th anniversary of your rooftop? Do you call it a farm or do you call it a garden?
It's a farm.
It is a
and
farm.
Actually, this is located at our 1401 West Devon location up in Edgewater. And it's our second restaurant. And, yeah, 10 years ago, we finally were able to sort of build this farm out on our rooftop there.
Tell me how. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Helen.
It's a working farm.
Tell me how that farm fits into the mission of Uncommon Ground altogether.
Well, our vision for what we do is to nourish community and nurture nature. We are very much a green restaurant, and we grow a good portion of some of the food that we use in the restaurants on the roof and also the sidewalk farm at our Clark location. And we also have the first certified organic brewery in the state of Illinois, which pretty much uses probably about 98% local ingredients. And so we're very proud of that, and we're very proud of the fact that the food that we, you know, put out in the restaurant and the beer is certified organic.
Is it more expensive for you to keep that zero carbon footprint, or do you find it actually helps you make a profit?
You know, it's a little bit more expensive because obviously when you're buying those types of ingredients, or just in terms of our farm process, I'm the only restaurant in the city that, you know, grows a good portion of our own food on premise. And so I have a farm director and a farm assistant, so there's jobs created there. And we're also training a team of 8 interns. And over the past 10 years, that's about, 80 people or so.
Helen Cameron is on the phone line. She is the co-founder of Uncommon Ground. It's a really cool spot. I don't know if you've been there, but they have several crops. I think they're sort of a official monarch butterfly way station as well, as they try to keep things growing. But they grow, tomatoes, carrots, peppers, radishes, you would expect. They also grow grapes on that rooftop farm. And it's one of the top 10 crops that they come up with actually are grapes. And they've got a program coming up a little bit later in the summer. Helen, you're back with us now?
I'm back.
I was just about to tell everyone about First Fridays on the farm, but you should do it. You're the expert.
Well, you know, one of the things that's really important to us is to be able to share our process with everyone. So many people love to garden. So many more people are beginning to do that. A lot of students come to our farm to learn about, you know, where their food comes from and how food grows. And we want to make sure that we share that. And sometimes the nice way to do it is just to throw a party. So the first Friday of June, July, August, and September, we have an open house. And we just, you know, put out a big community-wide invitation for people to come join us. We're going to have some great weather this coming Friday. And, you know, people just grab a beer or, you know, come upstairs and hang out, watch the sunset, talk with our farm directors, talk with their neighbors, kids. We have a huge outdoor beer garden there, so people bring their dogs and come have dinner. So it's just really a fun night out and a nice way to sort of connect with the community.
More information at uncommonground.com. Helen Cameron, great to talk to you again. Can't wait for time number 4.
Thanks again, Steve. I really appreciate it.
You bet. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.